The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Merry Christmas. It is the last broadcast of the year for us and our Christmas special. And when you think Christmas, you think Charlie Brown. You think Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You think Frosty the Snowman. You think Bill O'Reilly. Okay, maybe you don't, but you should think Bill O'Reilly right now. Hello, Bill. Welcome to the program.
A Glenn Beck Christmas special, everyone, starring Andy Williams, Marie Osmond.
Yeah, it's great. And Dean Martin is going to be by in just a little while.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, so Bill, Merry Christmas to you.
Same to you.
I want to talk to you about a couple of things. I don't want you to leave before we talk about the story that broke in the Hill, because we haven't had a chance to talk about that. But first, trying to keep our theme going here of Christmas and the end of the year. Tell me what you think the three most important stories of the year were.
Okay. I think the most important story is the attack on Donald Trump by the media.
That's the number one most important story.
Yes.
Okay.
Because it's changed the way news reportage.
Ooh, word of the minute.
Word of the day, yeah.
Oh, of the day.
Is expedited in this country. So that's number one.
Okay.
Number two would be the rise of the American economy. And number three would be the defeat of ISIS in Syria and Iraq.
Wow.
Those would be the top three stories, Beck.
You know what? You know what's amazing about those three things is none of them are correct. None of them. None of them are right.
No, by what yardstick are you making that determination?
By, you know, everything that is good and decent and holy and everything that is, you know, based in common sense.
All right, so your top three stories are?
My top three stories. Now, I did this yesterday, and I'm trying to remember what the first one was.
Stories are not correct.
You don't even remember what the first one was.
Well, it's because they were so important. Okay, so,
no.
So here it is. Here it is. I got them in my memory now. Okay, you ready? Number one, Gorsuch. That's going to make a lasting impression and leave a lasting mark one way or another. I'm hoping in a good way on America.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with it. I don't think it's as important as my three, but it's certainly in the ballpark.
Well,
What's number two?
That's what Bill O'Reilly would say. Number two is the charge of fake news and the American people's inability to recognize truth, being able to see it, and also the press not being able to see it. You know, the right says this is fake news. The left says this is fake news. There is truth out there. And without someone being trustworthy enough to say, no, guys, this is the truth. I don't know how we survive.
Well, your number two pick coincides with my number one pick.
Yeah, but mine was
mine was
really kind of stated, you know, a little better.
But people expect that of you.
Yeah, and the third pick was because I think it has eternal and lasting ramifications if it's more than just talk, and that is the calling Jerusalem the capital of Israel.
All right. Well, that's a spiritual thing you're getting into now. I would not put that in the top stories because of the direct effect it has on people's lives. Now, if you're an Israeli, of course, But as an American, we're looking at this on the outside. So So my three stories were basically how they affect the folks.
So isn't it
my thing is looking out for the folks, Beck, as you
so
know.
So is it amazing that neither one of us put and I think it's this is more of a question of how much has happened that is huge this year. The Harvey Weinstein effect and what has happened in the last year and where we're headed in the next year. I mean, this is a remarkably huge story.
It is a big story, but it isn't touching the lives of the folks. It's more of a sensationalistic piece of culture that most people are kind of just looking at going, wow. But does it affect the way they live their lives, the way they go to work, the way they raise their children? No. It's salacious. It's sensationalistic. It is hysterical at this point in some precincts. But I just don't think it has a lasting effect on regular working people. Certainly you're going to have an effect on politicians because now you're going to get muckraking all day long.
Oh, it's going to be...
You're going to have effect on the media people. Anybody who's ever done anything wrong in the last 50 years, sooner or later it's going to come down and get you right between the eyes. There isn't a man in the country, a famous man in the country, that's safe. All accusations are destructive. It's trial by headline. And that is a very, very troubling thing. But important in the long run to people's lives, I don't think it makes a top three.
Okay. Speaking of culture and how it has gone off the rails, love your thought. This is CNN talking about a new Christmas book. Listen, and I'd like to hear your comment. Here it comes. Anytime. Oh, you don't have, she doesn't have it. Well, we'll come back to that. Santa is very busy.
If you tell me what it is, I can comment on it.
No. I want you to hear it.
You want me to hear it?
I want you to hear it from CNN. Okay, so then let me...
There's a new children's book out this Christmas. Takes us inside Santa's wedding. We meet Santa's husband, David.
What inspired Santa's husband?
It was sort of inspired by the annual tradition we have in this country of pretending that there's a giant war on Christmas and that traditional Christmas is under attack. So among other things, we were reading all of the news about the Mall of America hiring a black Santa Claus last year. And me and my now wife made a joke on Twitter that if we ever had a child, they would only know about black Santa Claus. And if they saw a white Santa Claus at the mall, we would just explain, well, that's his husband.
It says, like any married couple, they have their disagreements, but they always manage to kiss and make up, usually over a plate of milk and cookies.
Bill.
Yeah.
Okay, I wanted you to hear...
That's Don Lemon, right?
Yeah, that's Don Lemon doing that story, yes.
Yeah. All right, well, look, here are my initial thoughts on it. Mm-hmm. It is beyond shameful that CNN and others feel that they have license to denigrate all of our traditions. And that's what they're doing there. There's no doubt about it. They're mocking the tradition of Santa Claus, which is Saint Nicholas, generosity, pleasing children, magical time, mocking it, injecting in social justice to the Christmas season. Shameful, but predictable from these people who have disdain not only for America, but for traditional Americans who love Christmas.
So
they despise us.
Okay, I said earlier this week, kind of a controversial statement, I said there was no war on Christmas. The war on Christmas has been lost. And
won the war on Christmas. You were working at Fox, I was there, and that's when I launched, because you reminded me so much of Santa.
Yeah.
kind of a little pudgy. And,
okay,
you know, didn't have a beard, but
don't know if
very
that's...
generous, very, very
sure.
jocular.
Yeah. Generous. I could, like that part of, yes.
I could see you in your jammies up in the North Pole making stuff.
Yes.
All right.
Drinking hot chocolate.
Right. So when I saw you, I said, you know what? I'm getting tired of people like department stores threatening their employees with firing if they say Merry Christmas.
Yes.
And we had a list of them. And we put the list on the screen. And then Americans said, you know, we're not really going to shop in these places anymore, which the policy of firing people for saying Merry Christmas stopped abruptly.
Yes.
All right. So we won.
Well, I think here's what I meant by that. That I think we did win on people that aren't afraid to say Merry Christmas, which is very nice. However, when you look, and I gave the, you know, songs that are just on the playlists for Christmas from iTunes, there's not a religious reference in the 50 of them that I saw. We are a secular increasingly secular society.
That's why I send my kids to private school, because I don't want my children to be on the defensive when it comes to their religious beliefs.
Yeah.
And that's what we've done in this country. Thank you, Barack Obama. Thank you, Bill Clinton. Thank you, far left nuts. You basically, if you're a man or a woman of faith, now you have to be cautious about it. You can't offend anyone by saying anything about it. That's fascism. That's Cuban stuff. And I don't want my children to be a part of it. So therefore, I choose to send them to private school where they don't have that oppression. But you're absolutely right. This is a secular society. And in that regard, the far left kooks have won.
So let me ask you this, because you said that I reminded you of Santa, and that was very kind of you. I was wondering what for traditions for you, what were the traditions when you were growing up for Christmas around the Civil War?
You know, the muskets were outside lined up and the horses were whinnying.
No, seriously, what is something
You don't want to know about the Civil War?
Yeah, I know. What is the Christmas tradition that you either carry on or you miss that used to happen?
Here it is, Beck. Get your pen, take some notes. Stu can take the notes.
Got it.
My first memory on being on the planet is sitting on the stairs of my Levittown house, all right? Three bedrooms, one bath, little box house. At about 5 in the morning, I got up before everybody else. I must have been 3, maybe 2.5. And the tree was lit, and all the presents were under the tree. And I would just sat there for about an hour just staring at it, okay? That's my first memory on the planet. So that I try to duplicate that. We have a tree in the living room. We put gifts under the tree.
That's
we have
odd.
We go to church, and I usually go in and tell the priest, look, not too long, okay? Keep it about 10 minutes with the sermon.
And we
got people fainting. We got kids screaming, you know, that kind of
thing. So do you get your kids up and force them to sit on the stairs at 5 o'clock in the morning? Or
no.
No, okay.
No, I don't force.
All
I
right.
suggest.
Okay. Okay, good. Okay, so
if you want those gifts, you'll sit on the stairs.
So, Bill, let me go back here to something that we didn't talk about last week, which is the story that came out on the Hill and in the Hill, which is, you know, it adds a lot of credibility to it. Lisa Bloom, the attorney that orchestrated your departure at Fox, was shown to have been offering women money to tell a story about Donald Trump. She was accused, and she admitted to offering up to $750,000. Just to help these poor women out because they were afraid they'd lose everything if they came out against Donald Trump.
Look, I told you last Friday that big story was going to break, and it broke about an hour after your program ended. What the real disgrace is, too disgraceful. I said to everybody when I left Fox, this was a hit job. It was an orchestrated hit job. We always knew there was big money in play on all different levels, not just with me, but with Trump and a lot of other people. And this is a fact now. They have the memos, they have the emails from Bloom, they have all of this. So they lay it out on thehill.com, and if your audience has not seen it, go there. You can read the report. But the really, really shocking and makes me furious is that the New York Times, the LA Times, the Washington Post, the Network News, CNN, all ignored the story, didn't cover the story. Yet every sleazy allegation that comes down, they cover. They can't wait to cover it, all right? They didn't want to cover Franken, and now they're backtracking. Well, maybe he won't resign, you know, that kind of stuff. But if it's a conservative or a Republican, they couldn't care less what's true. They just slap it up. But when this comes in and it's absolutely 100% true, they won't cover. That is corruption beyond redemption. Okay?
All right.
Remember what I said. Corruption beyond redemption. We do not have a free press anymore in this country. All right. So all I'm going to ask your audiences to do is to read the story, and then take it to the next level, which the next level will be shown, that this is now an industry of destruction. They found a way to destroy people. It is involves money and politics, not in every case. There are women who have been hurt, and they deserve justice. But in many cases,
okay.
Lisa Bloom and her cadre should be put in prison, in my opinion.
Bill, I only have a minute. Thank you for sharing time with us this
sure.
year, and thank you for being on the program. And is it going to be a better year or a tougher
year? I don't know. I got to tell everybody that you were very generous to me.
I mean next year. Is it going to be a better year?
I don't know what's going to happen next year. I know that I just can't. But I want your listeners to know that you really are a fair man. And a man who doesn't want to hurt people and wants to do good on this earth, and that's the Christmas spirit.
Thank you.
I also want to tell him to go to BillO'Reilly.com and all that other business. But it's more important they like you than go to BillO'Reilly.com.
All right, Bill, God bless. Have a great holiday.
You too. Have a good time.
See you in the new year.
In the new year. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, man. He's nothing like spending a Christmas with Bill O'Reilly. I'll say that.
Yeah, no, he's
and it's BillO'Reilly.com, and the book Killing England is the one he's pitching right now.
All right, our Christmas special continues with more eggnog and more cheer in a minute. If you're thinking about selling your home next year, or worse, you've been trying to sell your home all this year, start fresh. Start without all the excuses. You know, if you haven't started yet, start in the right place. Real Estate Agents I Trust. You want your home sold on time and for the most amount of money. It really all comes from the agent that has the best marketing plan. Somebody that is going to be able to put your house in front of the most people. There are over 1,000 agents in America that have a great marketing plan and have your sensibility. Somebody who has kind of the same worldview, where their word is their bond, a handshake is a contract, you know, where they really mean it. We fully vet and handpick this team for their knowledge, their skill, and their track record. Thousands of families have already put realestateagentsitrust.com to the test. The results are really, truly remarkable. It's realestateagentsitrust.com, already helping families who are moving from one area to another across country, families who have been taking care of their parents and now the house needs to be sold and they don't know what to do. realestateagentsitrust.com. You're selling, you're buying. realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck.
Merry Christmas from the National Bar Association! Restrictions apply. From us, the wishor, to you, here and after called the wishy. Please accept without obligation, implied or implicit, our best wishes for an environmentally conscious, socially responsible, politically correct, low stress, non-addictive, gender neutral celebration of the winter solstice holiday. Practice within the most enjoyable traditions of the religious persuasion of your choice, or secular practices of your choice, with respect for the religious, secular persuasions and or traditions of others, or their choice not to practice religious or secular traditions at all. And a financially successful, personally fulfilling and medically uncomplicated recognition on the onset of the generally accepted calendar year of 2001, but with due respect to the calendars of choice of other cultures or sects, and having regard to the race, creed, color, age, physical ability, religious faith, choice of computer platform, or dietary preference of the wishy. By accepting this greeting, you are bound by the terms that this greeting is subject to further clarification or withdrawal. This greeting is freely transferable, provided that no alteration shall be made to the original greeting, and that the proprietary rights of the wishor are acknowledged. This greeting implies no promise by the wishor to actually implement any of the wishes. This greeting may not be enforceable in certain jurisdictions, and or the restrictions herein may not be binding upon certain wishes in certain jurisdictions that is revocable at the sole direction of the wishor. This greeting is warranted to perform as reasonably may be expected within the usual application of good tidings for a period of 1 year or until the issuance of subsequent holiday greeting, whichever comes first. This wishor warrants this greeting only for the limited replacement of this wish or issuance of a new wish at the sole direction of the wishor. Any references in this greeting to the Lord or Father Christmas or our Savior or any other festive figures, whether actual or fictitious, dead or alive, shall not imply any endorsement by or from them in respect of this greeting, and all proprietary rights in any reference, third-party names, and images are hereby acknowledged. Merry Christmas from the Glad Bag Program. Some restrictions may apply.
Glenn Beck.
By the way, this is from the Christmas album Believe Again, which is a great, great CD. Grab it for Christmas, available on Amazon and everything else. One of the things that has been really remarkable to me this year is our fascination on space. From Elon Musk and what he is doing to go to Mars, and last Friday, we sent something up for the International Space Station, and we used Elon Musk's SpaceX, and to watch that thing launch, and within, I think, 10 minutes, the booster rocket was back landing on the launch pad. It was absolutely phenomenal. There's something else that's going on, and that is what the New York Times released this last week, which was, are we alone? And the money that the government has spent looking at UFOs. And one of the guys who is a career intelligence officer, he worked with the U.S. Army, the Department of Defense, the National Counterintelligence, Director of the National Intelligence. He was a special agent in charge, blah, blah, blah. He has been around this. Now he is with To the Stars Academy and the Director of Global Security, Luis Elizondo. Hello, Luis. How are you, sir?
Good, Mr. Beck. How are you, sir?
Very good. So I would tell you to call me Glenn, but you're a career military man, so I have a feeling it's going to remain Mr. Beck. Luis,
old habits are hard to break.
Sorry. I know. Thank you for your service, by the way. Do we believe that there is life that is visiting us, or is this hype?
Well, when you say we, let me clarify, at least just from my perspective, because I certainly can't speak on behalf of every American.
Yeah.
I certainly wouldn't pretend to. And as far as speaking for the department, it's been about 2 months now since I've been out of the Department of Defense, so I certainly can't speak on behalf of the department, but what I can do is speak on behalf of myself, and I think on behalf of my colleagues that work this particular portfolio. And I think the evidence at this point is quite overwhelming. I think as we are entering this, as you said just now, kind of this new era of space, I think we are entering a new era where the evidence is quite frankly overwhelming.
Yeah, we saw the video that they released, and I would imagine that there's maybe even more compelling stuff than that. But we saw the video, and the airmen talking about look at this. It has no wings. I've heard you talk about seeing things and having documented footage of things without a propulsion unit, no wings, no surface, that we would recognize as anything that would keep something afloat. Is this the most compelling thing that you have? Is this video, or is there more that you have seen?
Yeah, no, there's significantly more. These two videos that are out in the public domain are simply just a very, very small sample of the collective amount of information that we have over the years.
So, Luis, was there a conversation in the agency, or in this, group of we need to tell the American people this is not information that the government should hoard. This is really kind of important stuff.
Well, I think that's a fantastic observation. In my perspective, it may be a little bit more selfish. And that was, I needed to be able to tell the most senior levels of DOD leadership. Please keep in mind that, as a former soldier and a employee of DOD, my loyalty is first and foremost to the American people. Second is to the Department of Defense, and third is to the Secretary of Defense. In this particular case, I think we're in a situation where this country has never had a better Secretary of Defense, in my opinion. And yes, I'm a little biased, but I think I can say that because I served with the man and have seen him in combat situations. So my loyalty to the boss is paramount. And when you are in an organization, a department where silos and stovepipes restrict the ability to give the top commander the information he or she may need to make critical decisions, regardless of resources, we have an obligation to make sure that we have that ability.
So what kind of decision would they would somebody in the Defense Department need to know this information? I mean, have you seen hostility or what?
Well, I'll get to that piece in a second. And the answer, in short, is we haven't seen any overt hostility. But keep in mind, in DOD, we are a national security organization. And so I don't want to say we get paid to be paranoid, but we definitely get paid to make sure things aren't a threat.
Yes.
So if we're not sure it's not a threat, then we have to presume it could be a threat. Not that it is, but it could be.
Yeah.
And so we need to understand how these things work. And from my perspective, our secretary is a guy who likes more information, not less. And I think the issue really being stigma within the department. Secretary Mattis inherited a wonderful department, but a department, no less, that over 70 years has developed some silos and stovepipes. And the things that DOD does very well, obviously, looking at defined threats such as terrorism and potential nuclear weapons and chemical weapons and proliferation of issue du jour. The one thing that it's not very comfortable with are those things that are very hard to define. They tend to be a bit nebulous. Things that we say, look, we don't know what it is, we don't know how it works, and we're not sure we can do anything to stop it.
What's the most amazing... Go ahead.
No, please, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, what was the most amazing thing that you it's one thing to say, well, we don't know if it's a plane or something. What is the most amazing thing that you saw that you would be comfortable sharing with us?
Sure. And thank you for saying that, because I will caveat that I still have a security clearance, or at least
yeah, sure.
Now. And I am obligated to protect any and all classified information. So whatever I share, of course, has to be classified. But what I can share with you is I think just the overwhelming amount of data and reports that we have received from people who are, keeping in mind, these are people with the highest levels of security clearances. These are people who are trained observers. They fly multi-million-dollar weapon platforms for their country on a daily basis, and they are the most trustworthy of trustworthy. And on top of that, these folks understand what they're looking at. It's not the fact that they just happen to be astute observers. They're actually trained observers. And on top of that, we now have equipment that can very quickly ascertain what we're looking at, if it's an aircraft, if it's a missile, if it's a drone. To the point where we actually know either what kind of drone it is. And unfortunately, I can't go into more detail than that. But with that said, the most compelling thing I've ever seen, I think, is it's a bunch of things. It's not just one thing. I think when you one thing is to look at an object in a radar return or on a screen, and if you don't know what you're looking at, it's easy to say, oh, it's just a fuzzy dot, and the camera pans off screen. When in reality, that's not what's happening. When in reality, what you're looking at, if you understand what the radar return is telling you in infrared hot, infrared cold, et cetera, is an object that we can't get close to. It is taking evasive measures to avoid us getting close. And then when we do get close, it takes off at incredible velocities that frankly defy our understanding of logic, really. We're talking about objects that can go from drop from 80,000 feet down to 50 feet in a hover and then instantaneously jump back up to 80,000 feet. And when I say 80,000 feet, it's actually higher. That's as high as we can see it with a particular system. Of course, we have other systems that are better than that too. But in this particular case, in other cases, we are seeing things that will interfere with equipment and our ability to further
study
collect information on these things.
Correct. I only have 30 seconds. Are we going to be seeing more of this, or are they still going to keep tight-lipped? Is this pretty much what we're going to find out?
Well, I hope that we do more as a nation to insist that we see more. I think we need to make sure that we engage who we need to engage our leaders and say, hey, look, this is worth investing. I hate to say it, but $22 million, that's not enough. I know everybody's getting wrapped around the axle about the money, when really the bigger story here is, folks, we've been looking at this stuff for a while and it's real. And as a nation, we need to decide, is it a national security imperative?
Former Pentagon UFO official, Luis Elizondo. Fascinating. If you have been thinking about home security, I kind of understand it. I mean, this is when our homes have a lot of stuff in it, sitting right underneath a tree. You can't miss it. It's all lit up. And people are desperate. And there are people that want stuff out of your house. Well, you've been hearing me sing the praises of SimpliSafe Home Security for a long time now, and it's because it's the best protection, period. I mean, you're not going to believe how these security systems and the security systems that we've always had that are hardwired to your house, how they have ripped you off. Try not to think about it when you see the price of SimpliSafe and you see how this works. First of all, they have a package that is designed just for you. It has entry sensors, motion sensors, the glass break sensors, everything that you need to stop a criminal from ever touching your home. Right now, for the holidays, SimpliSafe, giving you an incredible offer. You can get $200 off this hand-picked security package. $200 off. It is an amazing price. Complete protection for your home. Already the best value in home security. But then, there's no contract. You're not paying somebody every single month. You own the system. And if you do want the 24/7 monitoring, it's $14.95 a month. And it's not under contract. So if you for some reason can't pay the $15 next month, don't worry about it. You don't have to have them do it next month and then pick it up 2 months later. Right now, and I mean right now, get $200 off this holiday special security package. Go to SimpliSafeBeck.com, possibly the best home security deal you'll ever see at SimpliSafeBeck.com. SimpliSafeBeck.com, save $200 right now.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
It's great to meet you guys.
Thank you. We're so happy to be here.
So let me start at the beginning.
Our company is called Rad Joy, and we make wooden surrender crosses. The purpose of the crosses is to help people let go of the problems that they're carrying. They write their burdens down on a sheet of paper, nail them to the cross. Our hope is that they feel that burden taken away.
We were just in a season of restlessness, I would say, and just really started praying that God, the prayer that I prayed, that God would open doors widely or shut them loudly, and that His will would just be so evident for us. And so the morning he lost his job, I called him and said, what would you think if you quit your job and we just did this full time? Because I could see as he was making the crosses, just this passion building in him.
That afternoon, whenever I got laid off, I mean, I got the biggest grin on my face because all of a sudden, it just, everything made sense. All the experiences I had up at that point were leading up to something that I didn't know what it was, but in that moment, he gave me a quick glimpse of, hey, here's what I got in store for you. There was just too many stars in alignment for this not to be what God intended.
It was the prayer that I had prayed, that God would make things very clear. And I'm like, it couldn't be more clear than this.
It had to be really hard when you're like, no, this is it.
This made no sense to anyone, but we had to put our full faith in what this was going to be. We just knew in our hearts that, you know, it's going to be a good story, a really great story.
People, they say they trust, and they say they want things, but they don't really trust, and they don't necessarily want it the way God gives it to you.
But what we have found, too, is it's the perseverance that's the hard part. Yeah. Because at the beginning, everybody's standing behind you. And we still have tons of support. But there's just, you know, there's months that are really hard. And we think, how are we going to pay our bills this month?
Yeah.
And yet, every single month, something has happened.
To surrender is to let go. It is to give yourself and to allow someone else, something else, in our case, Christ, take the reins.
The biggest thing is to let it go yourself.
So hard.
Just let it go.
It's just moment by moment. I see it on there. I'm like, I wrote it. I see it on there. And you can't help but not look at a cross and think, That's what we're supposed to do. I mean, yeah. Jesus died so we would be free.
It's not ours.
It's not ours anymore. It's not ours.
Let it go.
It's right there. I wrote it.
That's kind of our little tagline is, he's got this. So you remember that he said, I got this. You do your job. Let me do mine.
Yep.
After we started using our cross, we said, okay, this is going to be the way that we are going to recognize how faithful God is. This is now our family business. We wanted to do our best to get our kids involved with that. After Rick finishes creating the crosses, we have the kids write down different virtues. Before we give the cross to somebody, we will choose one of those virtues and we pray over them.
So we blindly choose one before we give it to somebody.
We don't say random anymore.
Yeah, we don't say it's not random, because we've had too many stories of people that have come back and said that word. It was divine, the reason why I got that word. People that it was health and literally were healed after that.
You pray over literally every cross.
Mm-hmm. We do.
Where do people go to find out and get one?
So we have a website, rad-joy.com.
Thank you so much. And it's really hard to start your own business, run your own business. Really hard to keep faith. It is, you're exactly right. Perseverance, because you'll get into it and you're so convinced, and about halfway through you're like, this is the dumbest thing I've done.
There are days
I cannot believe we thought this was divinely inspired. This may have come directly from hell.
But each day you can choose joy.
Yes,
that's
you can.
A choice you can make.
Rad-joy. Put them where they belong. Put your burdens where they belong.
Glenn Beck.
America, it's a classic Christmas program for you. We're so glad that you are here today. It's our Christmas special. We're going to be talking a little Christmas, going to talk a little news, a little year in review as well. We're doing specials on television all this week. I brought the band back. Stu and Pat and Jeffy on television at 5 o'clock, and we're talking about all of the things that have happened in 2017. Last night was the world, everything that had happened in the world. Politics was on Monday, and I believe tonight is culture. And there has been a lot that has happened in culture, and I want to play just some of the things that I have selected as, these are probably going to be in the history book at some point, depending on who's writing them. These are really pretty important, and some of them you may not have even noticed. This one, I'm pretty sure you did. Cut one.
George Washington was a slave owner, and we need to call slave owners out for what they are. Whether we think they were protecting American freedom or not, he wasn't protecting my freedom. I wasn't someone who my ancestors weren't deemed human beings to him. And so to me, I don't care if it's a George Washington statue or a Thomas Jefferson statue or a Robert E. Lee statue. They all need to come down.
Just moments after they were saying, oh, just because you take down Robert E. Lee, no one's going to ask for George Washington. You guys are conspiracy theorists.
It was literally the next day. Yeah. It was literally the next day. We have gone through, and you know what stopped this nonsense, or at least put it on pause? Hurricane Harvey.
Jeez, yeah.
It was the hurricane.
It was right around that time.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Everybody was so gung-ho and pulling down all the statues. Hurricane Harvey hit, and we haven't gone back there, thank God.
That's true. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think these aren't fun trade-offs, though.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that we're a country of squirrel.
Yeah, we really are.
That's all we are.
What were you just talking about? I saw a squirrel run behind you.
Absolutely okay. No idea. One guy who I think is really coming into his own, and I think is the leading voice for the millennials, for conservatives, and that's Ben Shapiro. In case you missed this very important audio cut this year, listen to Ben Shapiro as he speaks to a pro-abortion student.
Right, the problem is that anytime you draw any line other than the inception of the child, you end up drawing a false line that can also be applied to people who are adults. So either human life has intrinsic value or it doesn't. I think we both agree that adult human life has intrinsic value. Can we start from that premise?
I believe that sentience is what gives something moral value, not necessarily being a human alone.
Okay, so when you're asleep, can I stab you?
I'm still considered sentient when I'm asleep.
Okay, if you are in a coma from which you may awake, can I stab you?
Well, then, no.
I'm glad you answered that, because I have no interest in actually murdering
you. But that's still potential sentience, and it's still a potential...
Like, I agree, like, it is potential sentience. You know what else is potential sentience? Being a fetus.
So good, man. He is so good, and so he's so dangerous to the left, and I really think that millennials, you know, I was talking to my older daughters the other day, and they were talking about some of their friends who are very, very, you know, New York centric, and they're just done with so many of the politicians. Al Gore came up in the global warming thing. They had no time for Al Gore. I was so glad to hear this. And I said, how come? And my daughter said, he's not a vegan, Dad. If you actually care, you're a vegan. And I said, do your friends know that? And she said, oh, yeah. And I think there's this moment coming. And I think we're already seeing it in politics, where the reason why the millennials like Bernie Sanders is he is who he says he is. That's it. That's just him. He's completely authentic. He is who he says he is. Oh, yeah, I'm a socialist. Yeah, a lot of people don't like that, but that's what I am.
Yeah, I'm going to be raising your taxes. Of course, they're going to go up.
Yeah.
He does say things like that.
He does. Yeah. He just said them last week when they were talking about, you know, the tax cut. Yeah, well, under me, it would have to go up. Yes. Okay, good. Well, you at least have some credibility. And I think there's coming a time where somebody like Ben Shapiro, who just politely says the truth, and that's what it is going to be, you know, dearly loved.
And you will have your chance to love him the next couple of days as he fills in here for the radio show on Thursday and Friday of this week.
Boy, I wonder who's behind that. I mean, that's fantastic.
He's pretty cool. Yeah, Ben's great.
No, he's great. Mm-hmm. He is great. Cut three, a sign of the times, maybe.
Are they mistaken? that their butt was grabbed? Is that what you're saying?
I am not saying that. I don't remember these. As I said, I take thousands of photos, so I don't remember these particular photos.
I think with all due respect, I think people are going to look at this and find it hard to believe that someone such as yourself wouldn't know that they were grabbing somebody's butt.
I can understand how people would feel that way.
But have you ever placed a hand on some woman's butt?
You know, I can't say that that hasn't happened. I take thousands and thousands of pictures.
This is crazy.
We sometimes in crowded and chaotic situations.
In any other situation, this would have been the clip of the year. The clip of the year. But it just shows how crazy this year has been.
That's true, Glenn.
Here is, by the way, yes or no, Stu, he is going to resign next year. Yes or no?
I'm feeling like I want to say no, but I'll go with yes.
Yeah, I want to go with no, and I'm going to go with no, so I'll hedge the bet.
Okay.
Four.
I think we should be very careful about artificial intelligence. If I were to guess at what our biggest existential threat is, it's probably that. So we need to be very careful with artificial intelligence. I'm increasingly inclined to think that there should be some regulatory oversight at the national and international level, just to make sure that we don't do something very foolish. With artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
This is Elon.
You know all those stories where there's the guy with the pentagram and the holy water, and he's like, yeah, you sure you can control the demon? Didn't work out.
I take it there will be no Hell 9000 going up to Mars.
Hell 9000 would be easy. It's way more complex than, I mean, it would put Hell 9000 to shame. Yeah.
That's Elon Musk. And I will tell you that I think I put this cut in there as one of the most important because I think we are going to be asked by our children and grandchildren, were you guys paying attention at all?
No, we were talking about how Hillary Clinton sucked and how Donald Trump sucked.
His people were kneeling on the field.
And
knelt.
And his hair is ridiculous. And then there were people that were, you know, dating each other. And then 5 years later, they decided that wasn't a date. That might have been rape.
Meanwhile, this is going on.
Yeah, it's the biggest story that nobody's talking about.
Yeah. And I think if I had to pick a piece of audio that was the poster child for who we are today, and I don't mean just this organization, I mean all of us. We are all this clueless that we stand, most of us stand and say the same kind of stuff, and everybody around us is like, I don't think they know what they're talking about. Cut five.
This is an apple. Some people might try to tell you that it's a banana. They might scream banana, banana, banana over and over and over again. They might put banana in all caps. You might even start to believe that this is a banana. But it's not. This is an apple.
CNN truly finds nothing ironic there.
Yeah, I mean it's a great spot if it wasn't for them.
Yeah, you know why this ad campaign didn't work? The only reason why this ad campaign was seen by anybody is because people mocking it. The only reason why this didn't work is because the promise versus performance. It doesn't ring true with at least half of the country when CNN does it. Coming up next, a Christmas special, a story for our times. Well, here we are in the holidays. Are you excited? Huh? I mean, if you're like me, you think to yourself, man, I can't wait till the family gets here. And then ding dong, the family comes and you're like, no. No, I'm suddenly not as excited. I remember now why we only see you people once a year. Anyway, if you want to do something that is easy and will bring your family together and you can laugh, there's a great party game. It is called Say Anything. Say Anything. Get it as a gift. Get it for yourself. Get it for your sanity. No stress. There's no timer. There's no rush. It takes about 30 minutes to play. You just gather around the table and you start talking and you say anything. It's a great conversation starter that doesn't involve politics. 30 minutes to play. Your kids can play. Grandma can play. Everyone. And you're going to learn a lot about your kids and your family's going to laugh a lot. What else could I say? Say Anything. Available at Target right now. Say Anything. Pick it up for Christmas at Target.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Don't we now gain a pair?
$1.87. That was all. And most of it was in pennies. Pennies saved one or two at a time. $1.87. And the next day would be Christmas. There was clearly nothing to do but flop down on the shabby little couch and cry. So Della did. After she finished her cry, Della stood by the window and looked out dully at a gray cat walking a gray fence in a gray backyard. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she only had $1.87 to which to buy her husband, Jim, a present. Expenses had been greater than she calculated. They always are. Only $1.87 to buy a present for Jim, her Jim? She fantasized about buying something nice for him, something fine, something rare, something sterling, something worthy of the honor of being married to Jim. Even though they didn't have a lot, there were two possessions in which the young couple took great pride. One was Jim's gold watch. The other was Della's hair. Della's beautiful hair fell about her rippling and shining like a cascade of brown waters. It reached below her knees and wrapped around her like a garment. She nervously pulled her long hair up into a bun, faltering for a second, while a tear or two splashed down onto the worn red carpet. On went her old brown jacket. On went her old brown hat. With a whirl of her skirt, she raced out the door and down the stairs and to the street and made her way to Madame's hair goods of all kinds. Della ran up the flight of the stairs to the shop. Oh, will you buy my hair? Asked Della.
I buy hair, said Madame. Take your hat off and let's have a sight at the looks of it.
Down rippled the brown cascade.
$20,
said Madame, lifting the mast with a practiced hand.
Oh, give it to me quick, said Della.
And within the next 2 hours, Della was ransacking stores for Jim's present. She found it at last. It surely had been made for Jim and no one else. There was none other like it in any of the stores, and she had turned all of them inside out. It was a platinum fob chain, simple and chaste in design, properly proclaiming its value by substance alone, as all good things should do. It was even worthy of Jim's watch. As soon as she saw it, she knew it must be Jim's. It was like him, quietness and value. The description applied to both. $21 they took from her, and she hurried home with the remaining 87 cents. With that chain on his watch, Jim might be anxious about the time in any company. Grand as his gold watch was, he sometimes looked at it on the sly because of the old leather strap that had been used in place of a chain. When Della reached home, she finally got out her curling irons and went to work repairing the ravages made by generosity and love. Within 40 minutes, her head was covered with tiny close-lying curls that made her look, unfortunately, a little like a schoolboy. She looked at the reflection in the mirror long, carefully, and critically. Oh, I hope Jim doesn't kill me, she said to herself. At 7 o'clock, the coffee was made, and the frying pan was on the back of the hot stove and ready to cook the pork chops. Jim was never late.
Della doubled the fob chain in her hand and sat at the corner of the table near the door where he always entered. Then she heard his step, and she turned white for just a moment. She had the habit of saying a silent little prayer about the simplest of everyday things, and now she whispered, please, God, make him think I'm still pretty. The door opened. Jim stepped in and closed it. He looked thin and very serious. Poor fellow, he was only 22 and burdened with a family. Jim stopped inside the door. His eyes were fixed upon Della, and there was an expression in him that she could not read. It terrified her. It wasn't anger or surprise or disapproval or any of the sentiments that she had been prepared for. He simply stared at her with that peculiar expression on his face. Della jumped off the table and went for him. Jim, darling, she cried, don't look at me that way. I cut my hair off and I sold it because I couldn't have lived through another Christmas without giving you a present. I'll grow it out again. You won't mind, really. You won't mind, will you? I just had to do it. My hair grows awfully fast. Say Merry Christmas, Jim. Say Merry Christmas and let's be happy. You don't know what a nice, beautiful, nice gift I got for you. You cut off your hair? Asked Jim. Cut it off and sold it, said Della. Don't you like me just as well anyhow? I mean, I'm still me without my hair, aren't I? Jim looked around the room curiously. You say your hair is gone? He said, almost with an air of idiocy. Don't look for it, said Della. It's sold. I'll tell you, sold and gone, too. Maybe the hairs on my head were numbered, she went on with a sudden serious sweetness, but nobody could ever count my love for you, Jim. Shall I put the pork chops on, Jim? Jim quickly snapped out of his trance. He unfolded his Della. He then drew a package from his overcoat pocket and threw it upon the table. Don't make any mistake, Del, he said. I don't think any haircut or any shampoo could ever make me like a girl any less. But if you'll unwrap that package, you may see why you had me going for a while at first. Della tore at the string in the paper. And then came an ecstatic scream of joy. There on the table lay the combs. The set of combs that Della had longed for in a Broadway store window. Beautiful combs, pure turquoise shell with jeweled rims. They were expensive combs, she knew. Her heart had simply craved and yearned them over the many years without any hope of possession. And now here they were, hers. But the tresses that should have adorned the combs now were gone. She picked up the combs and hugged the gift and looked with dim eyes and smiled and said, My hair grows so fast, Jim. Jim had not seen his beautiful present. She held it out to him eagerly. The dull, precious metal seemed to flash with a reflection of her bright, ardent spirit. Isn't it beautiful, Jim? I hunted all over town to find it. You'll have to look at the time 100 times a day now. Give me your watch, Jim. I want to see how it looks on it. Instead of obeying, Jim tumbled down on the couch and put his hands under the back of his head and smiled. Del, he said, let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them a while. I think they're just too nice to use right now. You see, Del, I sold the watch to get the money to buy your combs. What do you say you put the pork chops on? The Magi, as you know, were wise men, wonderfully wise, who brought gifts to the babe in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. And here I've related to you an uneventful chronicle of two foolish kids who unwisely sacrificed the greatest treasures in their home for one another. But in a last word to the wise, let it be said, of all who give and receive gifts, they are the wisest. They are the Magi.
Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck.
Back.
I was a little shocked yesterday when the House actually did something. It was remarkable. We'll talk about the Senate and the tax bill a little later on in the program. Welcome to it. It is our Christmas special. It's the last day before Christmas. So we have a lot of different things going on. At glenbeck.com, we've compiled a few lists, and we've checked them twice. One of them I gave you yesterday. It's all of the books that I've read in the last 6 months that I think you would enjoy, and that you could, you know, ask somebody for, or, you know, or if you're going on, you know, a trip or something, grab for a friend. They run the whole spectrum from history to science to novels. There is something there for everybody. Also, we're going to tell you about something else next hour that we have as a list. This one, I've made a list of a few things that I really love, and they go from, you know, $10 to, you know, $1,500. Actually, I'm sorry. Something that just has 4K in the title is, I think, $4,000.
A little pricier.
That one's a little pricier. That's one if you really, somebody in your life really loves you and has cash. But there's a couple of them that I found. One that I think this is the coolest thing ever. It is a copy. If you go to glenbeck.com, look for My Favorite Things, a copy of the gold albums that we sent into space on Voyager. Click on that one, Stu.
Yep, I'm looking at it now. Voyager Golden Record 3LP box set.
Do you even remember Voyager?
I mean, yes. This is the NASA situation.
Yeah, the NASA situation. I think 76, 78, something like that. We sent a spacecraft up, and its first stop was Jupiter. I think it was maybe 76, and it got to Jupiter in 79, maybe. And then it was supposed to just travel outside of our solar system, and I think just did it. Just left our solar system. And one of the things is they had Carl Sagan oversee these gold albums that they made. And on the album, you'll see there's a little etching on how to listen to them. And, you know, how to make a stylus. We included a stylus on, like, I hope you have a turntable, but we included a stylus on the ship. They had to be made for gold, but out of gold, so they wouldn't decay in space in extreme heat and extreme cold. And they don't. They run half of 33.5, so they're half again as slow. I think it's an hour and a half on each side, and some of them is just one side's just music of the entire world, sounds from the entire world. Greetings in every language. I've never heard them, but for $98, that is a cool gift.
It's a cool gift for someone who really loves space, right? If you really love this stuff, it's very. I mean, I feel like it is a one listen. You probably.
But it's cool but to it's have. Cool I mean, I just think you have, you know, the gold records. I mean, that's really cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is, and I don't know why, and it's in space again. I don't know why I want one of these, but I want one of these. You see it?
Astro Reality Lunar Pro?
Yeah.
You are a space geek. What is this?
I am. Okay. Well, look at it. Is it
an Astro Reality Lunar Pro is a 1/28,969,000th scale model of the moon that you can hold in your hands.
It's exact. It's super heavy. And it's all hand done. How much is it?
It's not hand done. It's precisely 3D printed.
Yeah, but it's hand painted, I think.
Okay. The resolution of 0.006 millimeters per pixel and features an unparalleled augmented reality experience of the moon.
Yeah. So you're like holding the moon in your hand, and wow, it's an exact copy of the moon.
Wow. That's really weird. And you can go, that's really cool. You can show, like, if you put your phone up to the moon and look at it. It will pop up details of what happened at that spot.
Yeah.
Like
Project Apollo. It shows where we landed and everything else. It's real.
Yep, I think
it's
hand painted layers. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
How much is it?
I don't see a order now. Let's see. If I click on the order now, I might get that. Probably really cheap.
Yeah, probably.
Really cheap. maybe $199. Is that right?
Shockingly inexpensive. I thought it was about $100. So $200.
It looks pretty amazing though.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Vivian Maier? She's the next on the list.
Vivian Maier. I don't think
not hitting you with any of these things, am I?
Not so far. No. So I will say, like, these are cool things, but they're not things that I would necessarily dive into myself.
Yeah, these are just things that are like, you know, they're just like cool, like, God, wow, that's really, you know, sitting on your desk, you know, an exact copy of the moon is just kind of cool.
Yeah, none of these gifts so far have queso on them, so
yes,
you have not connected with
me. I know,
yet.
Okay, all right, okay. So this one is Vivian Maier, and you have to watch the documentary, and I think it's up on Netflix maybe. This guy went in, he was a college student, and he was writing a thesis on something, and he needed a bunch of old photographs. So he goes to this local auction, and it's just somebody, you know, selling off, you know, like they sell off the storage units, selling off all of this photography. And there's all these pictures, and they're all black and whites, and it's from the era that he needs for his thesis. And so he buys it, and he doesn't realize it is boxes and boxes and boxes of film, some of it undeveloped. No idea who this woman is. He starts looking at the pictures, and they are so beautiful and so artistic and so odd. He starts taking them to, you know, people who know about photography and art houses. And the art houses are saying, you know, this is so-and-so, a very famous. No, it's not. This one is so-and-so. No, it's not. This was a woman who was just a, a nanny in Chicago. And she would go out every day and she would just shoot pictures in the 1960s of the people on the streets in Chicago. And the photography is amazing. Hmm. Amazing. She was an unknown. He bought the whole thing for like $100. It's now worth hundreds of thousands of dollars because she's become famous.
I do remember you talking about that documentary. It really is an amazing story.
It's a great story.
Yeah. And the pictures look amazing.
Okay, so I'll get you on this one. Go to the Boring Company. Go to the one on the Boring Company.
Okay, next up, The Boring Company. Okay, yep.
$20. You gotta have a Boring Company hat.
Now, is this the company that's boring under Los Angeles?
Yes, this is the Elon Musk.
Yeah, sorry.
This is his hobby company that is boring under the company, boring under the streets of LA.
I mean, he is so punny. He really, like, he likes these little quirky things, like he did with the Tesla, where he has plaid speed,
yes,
which is beyond ludicrous speed, which is, like, all of the speeds of his multi-billion dollar company are Spaceballs references.
I love how quirky he is.
Again, if I'm a billionaire, that's how I'm doing it.
I mean, that's...
all the dumb memories I have, all these stupid little references that I laugh about with my friends, that's the name of all my cool crap.
Go to the next one, because I got to get you on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Not standards manual, but the next one. I want one of these so bad.
Is this the Star Wars thing?
Yes.
Yes, okay. A BB-8 fully interactive droid.
Okay, so I know somebody who has one.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think I know who this is, actually. Yes.
And it works, and it will follow you around.
And it actually, like...
It responds to you.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen it work, so it's hard to believe. Because, I mean, even just how it would move like it moves would be hard to put together in non-galaxy far, far away type of situations. But apparently it actually will follow you around the house, which is...
And it's like $198?
$149.
$149. You get that and the moon. You got everything you need. And the boring hat.
Again, like, look at how much of the only thing is the photography book that wasn't space related, basically. Elon Musk is you pick the one he's going under the earth, but all of his other businesses go above it.
Well, I am skipping some stuff. Mm-hmm. I am skipping, you know, stuff that's on, you know, on a list.
Mm-hmm.
And everything on my list is quirky. I mean, it's not like, you know, everything on my list is quirky. Go to the other Amazon one just because it's cool. Oh, that one.
Just because it's cool. All right. I'm clicking on just because it's cool. And
which one is that?
The endoscope.
Okay. I saw this. I do not know. I don't know what this is made for. But it doesn't seem like it's made for anything good. However,
I think this is great. You can plug it into your computer and it comes like, what is it, 8 feet?
16 feet. 16 feet.
So it's a little teeny camera that will run 16 feet in a bendable scope. Now, I got to believe that this has been used for something that you shouldn't be using cameras for.
Did Jeffy get on your computer somehow? No. How is this a favorite of
yours? I don't know what I want that for. I don't know what I would use it for. But there's got to be something that you're like, you know what? If I could just see 16 feet in that little teeny crack.
Well, I know they have, they use this for like these types of cameras for surgery. You're not planning any surgery.
No, I'm not. No.
They do it for like if you're trying to fix your car or something, you can, or like, you know, plumbing situations, yeah. You can go down. They have those. Obviously there are some shadier uses.
Those shadier uses did come to mind, which made me almost not put it on the list.
But it's only $25. And
it's a little teeny camera.
At least on Amazon, they have a click here and save an extra 20%.
I mean, I just want to go in places in my house that I've never been to. You just go, you know, go. I just want to look in through the ducts. And I mean, that's incredible. Anyway.
I think I'm just going to buy that one. It's $25.
Isn't that cool?
It's like, with the coupon, it's like $18. I don't know what I would use it for either, but it's kind of cool.
So I put this on my list. And I don't know if anybody can, relate to this. It's just on my personal list. I walked into a store the other day, and I was walking with Tanya. We were doing some Christmas shopping, and I walked in the store, and I mean, I wasn't 5 feet in the store. And I said, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm home. And I didn't know why. And I kept walking around, and I was like, I am thinking of my grandfather and my uncle and my childhood like crazy. And I thought it was just because it was a clothing store. And I thought it was just because, you know, it kind of, you know, looked like them or felt like them. Then I saw the label and it said Seattle underneath it. And it's Filson.
Hmm.
And everybody I know had Filson stuff when I was a kid. And it wasn't like now Filson apparently is a little like, oh, it's Filson. I didn't know that. I mean, it was one of those things that if you were going hunting or you were going fishing or something, you had Filson. Everybody had a Seattle shirt, a Moleskine Seattle shirt when I was growing up from Filson. I had completely forgotten about the brand. It is the best brand. If you are a hunter, the hunting shirts are unbelievable. The hunting vests, it's just really good stuff.
It looks really cool. Yeah. Well, on the pricier side, for sure. It looks very high quality, I will say.
Yeah, it's really, really high quality.
It's one of those things that was like normal people bought like a while ago
exactly
and now it's
right.
become cool.
No, it's what normal people bought when I was growing up, and then they continued to make it exactly the way they used to make it. And now to make it that way is really expensive. That's what it is. It's not like they jacked everything up. They're like, no, unfortunately, this is what quality costs nowadays.
Well, I got about 10 seconds to do my list, so we're out of time.
You can find my list at glennbeck.com. Do it now. Glennbeck.com, my favorite things. Isn't technology great? I mean, how much has technology helped you this year with your Christmas shopping? It has made mine a breeze. It used to be December 23rd and 24th that I would rush out to the mall and it would be so crowded and you'd walk a million miles because you could never get a good parking space. Now you just go online. 54% of all holiday shoppers visit their sites from mobile devices. Now this is great for us. However, the other people who say, isn't technology great? Are the scammers and the hackers. Be really cautious on the apps that you're downloading if you're going to buy stuff online. Read the reviews for any complaints about malware. 1 in 4 people experience identity theft. And if you're only monitoring your credit, your identity can be stolen in ways you can't even detect. And that's where LifeLock comes in. They detect a wide range of identity threats. They look at things beyond your bank account or the transactions at businesses. First of all, nobody can monitor all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But they uncover threats that you are most likely going to miss. Join right now and get 10% right off the top right now if you use the promo code Beck. Go to LifeLock.com. Use the promo code Beck at 800-LIFELOCK, 1-800-LIFELOCK, or LifeLock.com, 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck. Save 10% right now.
Glenn Beck.
It's the brand new PC Holiday CD, featuring all of your favorites, like Frosty the Snow Person, a postal representative is coming to town, and...
It's beginning to look a lot like...
Winter.
That's right. It's all of your favorite winter solstice classics, like I'm Dreaming of a Colorblind, Gender-Neutral, Animal-Loving, Accepting of All Cultures Holiday, and...
Oh, come...
You...
Oh, come...
You... Los Angeles.
Plus, you'll get Hark, the people over there sing. Deck the halls with inoffensive material. And who could forget the kids' favorite?
Alvin!
Okay! Holiday. Holiday. Time is near.
It's all right here for only $19.95. Order now and get the PC General Birth Recreation Set, formerly called the Nativity Set. Featuring Josephine, the Virgin Larry, the Three Wise People, Chin Ho, Takesha, and Herb Stein. And of course, the baby Jesus. It's the PC Holiday CD.
Is a great time of year.
Call now. We do not discriminate against any nation's currency or type of credit card.
Glenn Beck.
Sometimes death is a simple thing. A slip of the foot, a shift in the wind, a fall. Agios had faced death often in his 33 years. He had been an adventurer, a hunter, and to tell the truth, something of a rogue. He had always expected to die by violence. His blood spilled and his body racked with agony. After he married the gentle foreigner named Wailea, though, he had begun to consider his ways of life and death. For her sake, he had hoped that when his time come, he would die well, as a man, not crying like a child or pleading for mercy. For years now, the boy had been begging to go with his father to the savagely dangerous land of bare sun-struck stone and rocky crags where they now stood. A muscular, broad-shouldered man with flowing midnight black hair and a long black beard, and beside him, a thin-limbed lad of only 10. The previous winter, Wailea had died in a premature childbirth, along with Phylos's stillborn younger brother. The loss of his mother had left the boy pale and unsmiling, and left Agios feeling that his heart had turned to lead. And so, Phylos's coming with him on this trip was not a gift, but a necessity, for Agios had no one to watch over the boy. It had hurt, though, that the first faint smile that Agios had seen on his son's face in months had flickered there for a moment when Agios had said, "Let's go gather the frankincense."
Come on, let's go.
Now they stood at the top of the cliffs where the trees grew, looking down at the sheer rock face. Agios had already taken the resin from the first small grove of trees they had come to,
and now they had reached the true Orchard of Wealth. "And you must pay close attention," Agios told Phylos. The boy nodded solemnly. "You must take care. The resin is more valuable than gold because it is so hard to find and collect. We will sell it to traders on their way to Egypt and Greece and Rome, even India, faraway places where people covet it. What we collect in one day will let us, my son, live for a whole year." Phylos nodded impatiently. "I know, father. You've seen the dangers when you've watched me gather the resin. Remember how careful I've been and do the same things. You understand?" "Yes, father." Phylos looked eager for the perilous work, and Agios well understood the intoxication of it. The resin offered rich reward at high risk. Of course, his son was captivated. Of course, he had counted the days until he could follow in his father's steps. Libanos trees, hunched and gnarled, clung to the cliff like weary climbers. At the pitch of noon, no wind stirred their branches. Many months earlier, Agios had climbed down to make careful incisions in the flaking bark so the golden tears would flow and dry. And anyone else who discovered this remote ravine with its precious trees might try to investigate, but they would soon hear the hiss of the snakes twining among its branches or feel the fatal sting of their fangs. Agios had deliberately established this colony of adders, now guards of his precious grove. Knowing the serpents were there made all the difference. Together, father and son threw rocks at the snakes, forcing them to lower branches, to trees further from the edge where Agios had marked Phylos' first tree. Because of Wailea's death, Agios had waited longer than usual to harvest, and the resin was nearly dry in the slash marks, golden and fragrant. That made the frankincense even more valuable. Agios knelt beside his son and looped a coil of rope around the boy's waist. "Listen, when you gather the flakes, remember they're worth more than everything we own. It's a great responsibility." "Yes, father." "Be careful." "Yes, father." Agios tossed a few more rocks to make sure the snakes had retreated, then tugged the rope to test it and put his big hand on his son's neck. He bent the scruffy head and inhaled the warm, woody scent of Phylos's hair. Before they had set out, Agios had scattered the dust of his last harvest of frankincense, the residue from the bags, over the coals in their cabins. And Phylos carried the lingering aroma of it, like pine and lemon and earth. To Agios, frankincense smelled exactly like his son. But Phylos drew back grinning, his excitement palpable. He edged toward the drop, his eagerness saying that this was not the time for affection, but for action. Agios looped the free end of the rope around his own waist and took it in slack. Phylos had grown up in the high mountains, and he didn't falter when he lowered himself over the rocky edge, rope tight, knees bent, feet braced on stone. A misstep sent a shower of stones and gravel tumbling down the escarpment. But Phylos adjusted himself and made it safely to the tree. Agios found his son's weight absurdly easy to bear. But just in case, he had doubled the rope around his own waist. Phylos's life depended on it not slipping. He leaned back, watched his boy find and peel off the bubbled resin, the small sun-browned hands tucking each lump carefully away in the leather pouch at his waist before moving on to the next. Pride tightened Agios's throat. Pride and the sort of love that reminded him that everything else he loved in life, his wife, Phylos' brother, now lived only in the boy. Agios knew Phylos was taking too long, but this was his first time. He didn't urge the boy to hurry, because haste meant mistakes. He saw him brace his feet and lean into the gnarled branches, reaching deep into the heart of them. Then Phylos screamed and jerked. His arm flung wide. A snake clung to it for half a heartbeat, then fell loose, tumbling, writhing. Phylos' agonized face arched back, and he shouted,
"Father!"
Though it had happened in less than a second, Agios was already hauling on the rope, his hands strong and sure, while his heart beat wildly in his chest. The boy flailed in agony, blood from the bite splattering his arm and his face as it spasmed. His twisting caught the rope between the body and the rugged cliff. Agios, frantic to recover him, didn't realize that the knot was abrading until the rope snapped, with Phylos not yet at the top of the cliff. Agios screamed as he watched his son fall, his dark eyes locked on the child that was everything good, that held all the hope that he had left in the world. And he could do nothing. Phylos fell straight down to the lowest tree, smashed into it with the impact that surely ended his agony and fear. His body hung caught there, broken and lifeless. After his first wail of pain, he had not cried out again. He died like a man. It took Agios a day and part of the night to retrieve Phylos' shattered body and take him back home through a sudden rainstorm. In their cabin, Agios rested before leaving for the warmth of the cool night. The wind, soft on the heels of the rain that had preceded it, filled the air with a scent so warm and so rich, so full and verdant, that it seemed an affront, whispering slyly of living things, of flowers, fresh leaves and green. He held his breath. From a lean-to shed behind the cabin, Agios took a homemade spade and pick and carried them to the top of a low rise not far away. All around the plateau that night lay soot dark, but Agios had a hunter's vision, and the stars sufficed for the work he had to do. A cairn of pale, smooth stones marked the grave of Phylos' mother and stillborn younger brother. Near it, Agios had begun to dig a second grave. Difficult at first because of his weariness and because he didn't want to do this for his son. His body was trying to refuse the errand, but Agios had no choice. The rain had only slightly softened the soil and had not penetrated very far. Agios swung the pick, chipped in the solid earth, moved to the side, and did it again. Gradually chopping the hard ground into solid chunks, and with that effort, he could pry loose and stack on one side of the grave. His shoulder muscles clenched and tightened, and Agios began to sweat from the exertion. The rhythm of the pick and the burn of his arms was a relief in the pain he could lean into. Here, in the shallow bowl of a mountainside glen, the soil had accumulated over centuries. Some washed down on the slopes in the lower forests into the fertile river valleys, but much of it remained here. It lay rich and dark, and in the spring and summer it yielded fruits and vegetables to supplement the meat that he brought home. Agios was part hunter, part trapper, part farmer, part collector, and all things he did well. But now, what was he? He pushed himself, not pausing to rest. He didn't realize that he had fallen until the rocks began to dig into his knees. He welcomed the pain, something sharp and insistent that drew a little of the agony from his chest. He couldn't breathe. He couldn't see. He blinked against the dark night with the tears that clouded his vision. The mountain cabin was solitary, but Agios was past caring if anyone could hear his sobs, the racking cry of an animal dying, of a shattered man. He wanted to die. He felt dead already. By the time the sun rose, Agios was an empty husk. Some blood seeped into the ground beneath his legs and mixed with the dirt on his hands. But he didn't know if it was his blood or Phylos. The climb down the ravine and back up again with his broken son slung against his back had been a nightmare that no man should endure. Agios could still feel the slight weight between his shoulders, though Phylos now lay wrapped beneath an olive tree, less than 2 strides away. Agios glanced at Phylos' body and wished to see the slight rise and fall of his son's slender chest. But there was no undoing what had been done. The boy lay as still as stone and just as cold. Morning burnished the marble skin of Phylos's arm, where it had fallen out from the folds of the cloak that Agios had wrapped him in. It was an outrage, a cruel joke that sunlight could make even this small portion of the child look so beautiful and so whole. Agios scrambled over and tucked the slender arm back into the cloak before, with tenderness that belied the taut muscles of his forearm and the stern slant of his dark brows, he lifted the body. He did not look like a compassionate man, but he stepped into the grave himself that he had dug and placed his son into the center as gently as a mother laying down her newborn to sleep. "My son." His mouth formed the words, but Agios made no sound. Even though he tried again and again, his throat clenched with grief. Still moving his lips, still groaning with the weight of all the yearning he couldn't voice, Agios touched the place where Phylos' face was shrouded by the dusty cloak. It was the kind of blessing he offered in place of the words he could not say, a way to remember the feel of the boy's high cheekbones, the proud nose that he had shared with Agios, and the fine mouth that was his mother's. It was a father's last goodbye. The grave was small, but Agios bent his knees and back and lay beside Phylos, his cheek in the grainy dirt and his hand resting on the body of his son. He wished he could have dug the grave larger, so large that he could creep in with his boy and pull the earth in after him. He imagined the dirt filling his nostrils, choking off the air, bringing death, bringing peace. But how could he share the grave when he had allowed his own son to die? No, he would leave his bones elsewhere. When Agios took up the spade and began to shovel the loose earth into the hole, his grief was already finding a new incarnation. He burned with sorrow. The flames began to ignite a fury in his belly, an anger that grew with each spadeful of dirt. He filled it in the grave and lunged stones from the bed of a nearby stream with a strength that seemed inhuman after his loss and his sleepless night. He finished before the sun stood noon. Agios looked at the fresh grave, the old grave, and the home that was no longer a home. And then he dragged his steps back into the cabin. The red embers of a fire still glared at the grate, and Agios blew them to life. He threw wood on, all the firewood in the bin. And then when that was gone, the stools that he had sat on, the short, crooked table that he had made before becoming used to carpentry, the olive wood bowl his own hands had carved. What did he need to have these things now? Of the small bed that he had shared with his wife, the pallet where his son had laid his head. When the fire roared, he raked the burning coals out and scattered them across the floor. No vagabond would find an empty house and live here, where the memories of Wylea and Phylos and the nameless little baby deserved peace. Agios didn't leave it until it was a blaze that could be seen for miles, a funeral pyre. The smoke choked the sun-bright sky, belching dark shadow across the mountain that spoke of evil things. He left on foot, with nothing in his hands. He didn't look back. I don't know if you saw this, but the Federal Reserve and the central banks now are starting to raise interest rates here in the United States, which is going to make your home, if you have an adjustable mortgage, going to make your home a little bit more expensive every single month. But also the central banks have, at least according to CNBC, I'll believe it when I see it, they say they're going to start investing in the stock market and Bitcoin too. Oh, well, that's going to work out well. If you have a mortgage right now and it's an adjustable, get a fixed rate.
Call the people at American Financing. A salary-based mortgage consultant is going to talk to you. They are dedicated to helping you make the decision that is the smartest for your family, that will align with your financial goals, not the goals of some big corporate bank. Pre-qualification takes you about 10 minutes. You can close in as fast as 10 days. And with American Financing, you get straightforward and effortless mortgage experiences. Find out if a reverse mortgage is right for you and your family. Reverse mortgages are a good way to increase the monthly cash flow with no mortgage payment while you still keep the ownership of your home. So call American Financing, 1-800-906-2440, 800-906-2440, or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
If you've never read the Immortal Nicholas, grab it online. Or if you're a subscriber to theblaze.com/TV, you can get it, and it's not on TV. It's only for subscribers. But every night we have been reading it. My son and I have been reading it aloud to you, and we're just, I mean, it's not fancy production or anything. It's just, you know, me, him, and a camera, and you know, in bed at night reading it. And it's really been, I don't know, we it's weird because we read all the time. But this has really been a cool bonding thing,
yeah,
for my son. We always joke. And the first couple of, you know, chapters, he wasn't joking around. And now he's you know, back to his normal self. But we always joke around, and we always are looking stuff up. Well, that can't be right, blah, blah, blah. This is the way we do it. And that's what's happening now in these chapters. And invite you to come on into our world and just watch it. I warn you, I'm a blubberer, and this is one of my favorite stories. I love, 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 love this story. And the last couple of chapters are going to be ugly. They're going to be ugly. and my son is like, oh, no, it's not going to bother me. I bet it does. I bet it does, because it's about a father and son.
And you get this at theblaze.com if you're a subscriber.
Yeah, you get it at blaze.com/TV and subscribe, and you can watch it on demand. And it ends, I think, on Christmas Eve. So you can binge, you know, if you just want to sit around on Christmas or, you know, that week, just binge on it at theblaze.com/TV. Also, you can watch
The Christmas Twist, the Facebook page. Oh, Glenn or myself, Stu, check it out. Watch it for free this holidays.
Lifetime movie done right or wrong by us. Glenn, let's put it that way. Welcome to the program. It's our Christmas episode. I'm looking for something to binge on, because I've binged on almost everything, you know, that immediately appeals to me on Netflix and Amazon.
Oh, Netflix and Amazon, because you were talking about binging, and I thought maybe it was drugs, alcohol, potentially salty.
This show makes
treats.
Me want to do it, so I'm just keep on, bro.
It does make sense.
You know, we were talking the other day, if you haven't seen the documentary Jim and Andy, you really need to.
Yeah, Jim and Andy, The Great Beyond is the name of it. It's the story of Jim Carrey as he played Andy Kaufman in the movie The Great Beyond that came out several years ago.
It was Man in the Moon, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Man in the Moon, yep. Yeah. It was 2000, mid-2000s, right? I don't remember. It was early 2000s, maybe?
Yeah.
But the story, if you've never seen that movie, I've always thought it was one of the most underrated performances of all time.
Jim Carrey is brilliant.
You just think it's him after a while. Yeah. You think it's Andy Kaufman. And so he got some credit for it, but it wasn't as praised as I ever thought it should be.
So this video is actually video that the studios made him hold back. He took video, he had a production crew take video all the behind the scenes. He stayed in character, and he was so Andy Kaufman and Tony Clifton, mm-hmm, that
the studio eventually said, we're not, you cannot release this video. They will hate you.
Yeah, they basically thought that Jim Carrey would, it would ruin his career if they released this behind the scenes footage because he was so nuts. And what happened in the interim is what we found out, he kind of actually was nuts. So then now they actually think it will help him. It's just kind of crazy.
You know, I don't think
I know you keep defending him on this.
Yeah,
but you know, he's had such a crazy time, and his career has gone downhill, and he's become such a I think largely interesting person, but interesting in a very strange way.
Absolutely. He is either, you will watch this and you will say to yourself, and it will be, there will be no gray space. Either Jim Carrey is full-fledged, out of his mind, nuts, or he is one of the most sane people that you'll ever meet. And I believe he's operating at a different level. I believe that he has found that there is no meaning in stuff and money and fame and everything else, because he had all of it, that he's like, this is not meaningful. I just want to have a meaningful conversation. And I think that's what it is. And he's not going to say anything to please anybody anymore.
You find when he's talking in the documentary, because they have interviews with him today talking about his experience doing the movie.
Do we have a couple of clips?
Yeah, yeah. And I think you kind of notice that it's almost hard to have a conversation with him because he can't just take anything at face value. He has to constantly examine what you're saying and how you're saying it and what you mean. It's just, I think he's been very difficult to actually deal with in real life. But he's very, it's very interesting to watch.
Yes.
This is him talking about kind of his experience back doing Andy Kaufman and the questions that people kind of want to ask.
I was just doing things that were weird. And then I'd go home and I'd lay on my bed and I'd think, what do they want? What do they want? What do they want? What do they want?
Okay, so let's practice.
It wasn't what I wanted. I knew what I wanted. I wanted to be successful. I wanted to be a famous actor. But what do they want? What do they want? What do they want? What do they want? And then one day in the middle of the night, I woke up out of a sound sleep, like sat up in bed and went, they want to be free from concern. And the light bulb went off. And the very next night, I went to the Comedy Store, and the first thing I did was say,
good evening, ladies and gentlemen,
and how are you this evening?
All righty then.
Like that. And it killed, slaughtered. Suddenly they just roared because they knew I didn't care. What I had decided in that moment in my bed was they need to be free from concern, so I'm going to be the guy that's free from concern. I'm going to appear to be the guy that's free from concern.
All right, so this is when he's talking about how he developed the character. He was just crazy, and he would just do crazy things. However, later, after he has made it big, he's played Andy Kaufman and everything else, and that played a role in getting him to where he is. Listen to him here.
Well, he wants to be liked. Jim Carrey wants to be liked.
Now, this is him as Tony Clifton.
His worst enemy.
There's a scene where Tony is talking about Jim.
He's a coward.
And he's saying stuff like, you know, he wants to be liked by everyone. He's a coward.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I think at that time he was pretty accurate, actually. You know, but there's truth, and then there's truth with charity.
And you notice he still talks about them, both of them, him.
Right. Andy Kaufman and Tony Clifton, both of them played by him.
And he also was asked to come back to be in the REM music video as Andy Kaufman. He wouldn't do it. He said, no, I had to rediscover who I was again. I didn't know who I was. He lost himself.
Yeah,
in those characters.
The career arc of Jim Carrey was like, okay, he's this goofball, right? Makes all this money, huge box office success. And then everyone talked about him, joked about him for years that he was just doing anything he could to win an Oscar. Remember that? It was like, you know, it was all of a sudden he was doing serious movies and like these challenging artistic movies. And this was kind of in that phase. And you realize, I don't think it was about an Oscar, but you realize how much he actually dove into these roles. The Andy Kaufman thing, it's insane to see him try to, off camera, doing all sorts of things when no cameras were around.
It's weird.
It's weird.
It's weird. But it's really, really interesting and makes you very, it makes you think. It really makes you think. But it's funny you said that about Jim Carrey, because I thought, I'd really like to interview him. And the more I watched, I thought, no, I bet he would be a bear of an interview.
Yeah.
A bear of an interview.
He doesn't seem like he would have any fun with it.
So we put our list together on the things that we have watched on Netflix and Amazon that we recommend to you. And I've rated them by stars. There's a couple of things I just want to point out. Ryan Hamilton, Happy Face.
Yeah, I've seen that as well.
Perfect for the holidays. You've got to watch that with your family. It's
stand-up comedy.
Hysterical, hysterical. Ryan Hamilton, Happy Face. If you like James Bond, watch Fleming, The Man Who Would Be Bond. It's a four-part series, you know, about Fleming, Ian Fleming, and it is shocking and wild, the stuff that he really was. Have you seen Mindhunter?
I've heard really good things about it, but I have not seen it.
You've got to see Mindhunter.
It's really good?
It is really good. Really, and terrifying.
Because it's about serial killers, right?
It's about serial killers? The truth is a true story-ish about the FBI when they first started looking into serial killers. They had all these serial killers and they were just like, execute them. And I remember the time. I remember my parents and my grandparents saying, you know, they're trying to make all these guys and give them excuses. They just kill them. They're all bad guys. Well, that was the idea. But back then they had never met real serial killers like this. So they said, we should talk to them. And so they go back and they talk to these real serial killers. Now this is all redone. It's a drama. But it is based on that time period, and it is fascinating, just fascinating. And the last one, I mean, I've got, there's probably 20 different things you can binge on my list, but The Marvelous Miss Maisel is hysterical and so well done.
What is it? What is it?
It is about a woman in the 1950s whose husband wants to be a stand-up comic. He's awful. In the pilot, he's shown to be a total fraud. He leaves her and he's like, I'm going to go live with my secretary. And she's been this amazing wife. So she goes down to the comedy club. She just ties one on and she is upper class. She ties one on in the 1950s and she goes down in her bathrobe onto the stage. And she is hysterical. Because she's hammered and she's like, who doesn't want a piece of this? You know, and she's showing her. So the cops come in and arrest, and she's arrested the same night as Lenny Bruce. And so her and Lenny Bruce become friends. And it's all about how this woman, what life was like. The guy who played Monk, what's his name?
Tony Shalhoub.
Oh my gosh, he's brilliant in this.
Really?
He's brilliant.
He's a really good actor.
He plays her father. And he's brilliant. If you like good comedy, laugh out loud comedy, but intelligent comedy, The Marvelous Miss Maisel, just fantastic. And I think it came from the woman who did, what's that stupid show? They just came back and they had a big reunion show last Christmas. The Gilmore Girls.
I think
the producer or the writer of Gilmore Girls did this.
Really, you had me there for a minute.
I know.
That's a good one. I'll give you a couple real quick. For funny, I think smart probably shouldn't be watched with kids. A couple of them.
Yeah, these probably should not. None of these would be watched with kids.
Documentary Now. Have you ever watched Documentary Now?
Yes.
Parody of documentaries. Very funny. So two episodes in particular I love.
Okay.
Episode two. Of season one and season two. Both of them episode two.
Season one, season two.
One is a parody of like a Vice documentary and one is the parody.
Hysterical, I've seen it.
It is hysterical. Amazing.
Yeah.
And then there's one that's a parody of like a cooking, like they go to the middle of the forest for a restaurant that only, it's like one of those type of things. It's really, really good. American Vandal, I loved American Vandal.
Didn't see it. I hear it's great.
Yeah, it's very well done and kind of a parody of like making of a murderer, but with a stupid crime. Again, not safe for kids. Brockmire on Amazon it's a very, very vulgar sports announcer story, but it is really, really funny at times. And for like, if you like true crime type stuff, the Confession Tapes particularly episode one and episode two, I was glued to it. It's a Netflix series. It's called The Confession Tapes, where they actually have tapes of people confessing crimes, kind of built on that structure. Really, really good if you like that type of thing.
So you can find our list at glennbeck.com. We wanted to put them there just in case, you've got some family over and you're like, I am going to the bathroom with the iPad and I am going to close myself in and watch.
That's exactly how you use it.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly. The list of things you can binge on, they're rated by stars, by us, by stars, and also divided up in family, et cetera, et cetera. So whose table are you going to be missing at? This holiday season, you can't be at everybody's house. And somebody is going to be sitting around their table and they're thinking of you and your family. And you are wishing you were there and they were wishing you were there as well. Send something for the table that shows them that you're thinking about them. Send them some Pro Flowers, a bouquet or a festive plant from Pro Flowers. Now, they also have their best-selling candy cane roses, which are a great option for a holiday gift or a December birthday or anniversary. Boy, that would stink. But you can also go with their classic mini Christmas tree that comes with lights and ornaments. No matter what you choose, send it to them. Tell them that we're there in spirit. And no matter what you choose, 20% off any Pro Flowers bouquet or plant, $29 or more. Pro Flowers, the bouquets and plants are guaranteed to stay fresh. You can control the delivery date, and they'll give you more bloom for your buck. Right now, Pro Flowers. Send them to somebody you love. Get 20% off all bouquets of $29 or more this holiday season. Go to proflowers.com. Use the promo code Glenn at checkout. That's proflowers.com. Promo code Glenn.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas would soon be there. The children were all nestled, all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads, and Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. It's dry leaves that before the wild hurricanes fly. When they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. Then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his sack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, and his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, and a right jolly old elf. And I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread, but he spoke not a word, but went straight to his work. And he filled all the stockings, then he turned with a jerk. And laying his finger aside his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team, gave a whistle, and away they all flew like down on a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
Glenn Beck.